The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2017 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2017. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Well, I think it's time. We can go ahead and start. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. How many, just a show of hands so I know what I'm dealing with, how many of you are Latin teachers? How many Latin students? Yeah, me too. And how many are other? I mean, do we have administrators who are looking to find tips for their Latin teachers or no? Okay. Well, When they were calling for presentations and papers, they wanted something that would be really practical for us Latin teachers. And I didn't know exactly what level of Latin teachers we'd have. But they wanted something for grammar. And I've seen a lot of really good grammar presentations over the years, and I didn't want to compete with them. I wasn't sure that I could offer you anything better. However, I hope mainly to encourage you in this talk with an understanding of how the nuts and bolts of the grammar and logic, and these are not fun and inspiring parts of the language. The picture right there gives us some clues about that. I'll explain in a second. But grammar and logic are not really very inspiring. They're dirty and gritty, and they require a lot of sweat. However, if you ever want to get to the inspiring parts of the language, if you ever want to get your students to the literature, you must be committed to using all your efforts in teaching them the grammar and the logic, and in teaching them through the grammar stage and the logic stage of learning. Because without it, very few people will ever make it to the highest goal of Latin studies. And of course, that's why the title, Non Sequitur, because so often what we are attempting to get our students to reach, and what we're doing in the classroom, they don't always agree very well, and we find that our students are not able to go on and read Cicero or St. Augustine or the Vulgate, or that they don't want to. And I think that we've got to lay the foundation earlier on. So that's what I'm going to talk about. This is a portion of a beautiful painting that hangs in the Art Museum of my hometown of Birmingham. It shows the seven liberal arts. There's also a panel for the seven virtues. And I love this painting, this allegorical painting. And these beautiful ladies are these arts of the trivium allegorized. And you'll notice that grammar is over there on, I guess it would be your right. And there's a gateway there. That's because grammar is the gateway. If you look at the full painting, there's only one gate, and that's because the road to all learning leads through grammar. And grammar to the ancients did not just mean subject and verb agreement. It really included basic literacy. So just learning to read and write is grammar. And then the particular technical grammar comes into it, and then even onto literature. But notice what grammar is holding and who's near her. What do you see? There's two children there. That's because, again, this is the beginning. This is where children must begin. What's grammar holding in her hand there, right hand? It does look like a wooden spoon, a little bit. There's more. At first I thought it was a scepter or a rod, but it's not. There are cords coming off. It's a whip. It's a flagellum. It's a scourge, a whip. This is because grammar is painful. Okay, so you can tell which direction my talk is going to go. Grammar is painful. One of my favorite quotations about it is that grammar sharpens the teeth of eloquence. And this is illustrated in a medieval manuscript that shows a bunch of students. They're small. They're sitting at benches. And there's this enormous, gargantuan, titanic, and frightful woman with sharp teeth who is their teacher. That's grammar. She's a harsh mistress. Anyway, you see rhetoric there in the center as the capstone of the language arts, and logic over there on the right. We want to get our students to the rhetoric, but we do have to go through the gateway of grammar. Now, just a word about your outline. If you're already sold on the idea of committing to grammar and logic, you're not going to need to take much notes for much in the way of notes for points A and B on your outline. So I'm going to run through those very quickly, because what I hope to do is give you a little bit of a workshop in showing you some practical tools that you can use in the classroom, because that's the reason they gave us these long block sessions. So, good. Grammar. Let's talk about grammar first of all. What is it? You can think of grammar as rules or exercises or materials. To use a few metaphors, let's imagine that we're architects. We're going to build a house. Grammar is the materials that you need to build. If you're an athlete, grammar is the exercises. Grammar is the exercises that build the strength so you can play that game. Or think about the rules of a game. Has anyone ever played spoons or similar games where you're invited to play without knowing the rules, and eventually you work them out? A language is like that. We're all invited to play, and we learn our native language mostly without any formal instruction, which is fine. The immersion-style technique, actually, Eric gave the session that I wanted to give just before, where he was showing you immersion-style learning, which is fantastic. Now, there's one disadvantage with immersion-style, even though I favor it and use it in my classes. The disadvantage is, just the same as if you put a child out on a baseball field who had never played baseball and they don't know the rules. They will learn, but it will take a long time. At some point, whether you're teaching immersion style or you're using a textbook that's cut and dry, you've got to start addressing the rules of the game. That's what grammar is. It's invaluable. In particular, when I say know the grammar, let's talk about what that consists of in Latin. And I've given you a handout. As I said, I like to teach in Latin as much as possible in my classes. But whether you're going to teach in Latin or not, you need to be asking questions of and directing your students' attention to grammatical things. And if it's any help to you, if you want, there's a list of, that's my go-to list for how to help my students in grammar while speaking in Latin. And I can, probably outside of this session, if you're curious, you can ask me some questions. I can show you how you can do that. Here's what we have to cover if we're a Latin teacher, assuming that we're covering everything. We've got verbs, we've got nouns, we've got adjectives, we've got pronouns, we got the whole bit, all eight parts of speech. And you have to help your students gain this. So in your purview is all of this material, all the forms, all the vocabulary, all the changes or morphology of each of these kinds of words. And it's really important. It's really important that you give this to them. Why? Because grammar gives us entry and accuracy and confidence. If we don't commit to explaining the rules of the game and illustrating them, as you said, Eric, the exempla, that's actually not you, it's Seneca, right? Iter longum est per praecepta, breve et efficax, yeah. So exempla are important. You've got to do it one way or another. The grammar provides entry, especially for people who are not naturally gifted or interested in it. And if you're in a classical school, you're teaching people who are required to learn Latin. You don't have the choice of the best and brightest who want it. You're teaching everyone. So you've got to commit to making sure that you provide easy entry for your beginners. And grammar allows us to do that by explaining the phenomena that we see in the language. It's also going to give you a certain amount of accuracy. We all learn our language more or less by guesswork. And over a course of many years, we learn to become more precise and careful in our use of language. Grammar is nice because it helps us to know for certain what we do know and what we don't know. And this gives confidence to the student rather than confusion. So this is the logic of it. And over there, one explanation of what grammar is by St. Bonaventura. It's one of my favorite old authors that I'm just newly acquainted with, saying that the aim of grammar is to express the truth. So it's good that we be accurate. How are we going to do it? There's another great commonplace. Repetitio est mater memoriae. Repetition is the mother of memory. Now, repetition can be really dull and boring, okay? So repetition is not the last word in teaching grammar. Yes, you want your students to conjugate verbs and to decline nouns and adjectives, but variety is important. Have them recite it from memory. Have them recite it forwards. Have them recite it backwards. Have them write it down. Have them take it down from dictation. Have them quiz one another. Put the forms of a noun on cards, 10 cards, scramble them up. Have the student put them in order, time them. There's many, many variety of ways that you can help your students to memorize grammatical material. And repetition is a big part of it. And use. If you never talk about grammar, your students won't know it. They will feel their way through the language instead of being certain of what they know. So you've got to use it. You've got to repeat it. Variety is what makes it fun and entertaining for the student, and that's your job. So I always say that I masquerade as a Latin teacher, but really I'm a stand-up comic for a couple hours a day because you have to be a little bit in order to keep the variety and the fun in the classroom. But I don't have to do that for you because you're not students. So I'm going to be real boring. All right, logic. Let's talk about logic. Logic's wonderful in learning a language because it's going to give us definition. You know, what is the difference between a noun and a pronoun? Or when you come to pronouns, what's the difference between a personal pronoun and a reflexive pronoun and a relative pronoun? These are very fine distinctions. We have to exercise logic in order to reach these distinctions, make these definitions. And logic is also useful the other way, as a diagnostic. When you find out that a student doesn't understand something, when you find out that they've mistranslated a sentence, the correct thing is not to tell them the answer. If they say Roma et Italia in Europa est, the correct answer is not simply to say, no, it's sunt. You have to do more than that. You have to model for them the correct answer, certainly sometimes, but you're also going to have to say things like Rome and Italy. You're going to ask a question, both Rome and Italy? Is that one or two? What number is that? Is that singular or plural? You can ask these questions so that the student comes to realize what their error is and fix it. In grammar, you're building in the knowledge and the materials. In logic, you're teaching them how to use them. Grammar is a pile of bricks. Logic is the blueprint. And you have to keep pointing them back to the blueprint so that they see how to fit those materials into the structure that they're building. We have a great definition there. The aim of logic is to teach truth. And once again, logic gives easy entry for the beginner by helping them to diagnose what's wrong. It helps them to become more accurate and not to approximate. Sometimes approximation and paraphrase is good, but we would probably not feel that way about the study of Scripture. There are some times when you want accuracy, and logic can help us with that. And again, it can bring confidence and clarity where a student is confused, where a student doesn't understand, why do we have est instead of sunt? Then it's time to ask them about number. Is it singular or plural? And help them understand that one form is for the singular and another for the plural. So just practically speaking, you need the logic. How are you going to do it in the classroom? Usus est optimus magister. Use is the best teacher. So typically what I do, and if you were in the previous session, we saw this also, is ask questions. Ask questions of my students. Socratic dialogue or any kind of question and answer is the way to do it. And in fact, you'll remember the Greek name for logic is dialectic. That is, you're working, it takes two people to work through this. It takes a question and answer process, a dialogue. And of course, at first it's totally external because the student doesn't know what their question is. And you as the teacher must ask. You have to say, how many people love? Because they say amat, and it should be amant. You say, how many people love? But eventually, you want them to learn to ask those questions of one another. What I love in my class is when a student gives a a reading of a sentence. They've made a mistake. And another student over here raises their hand and says, cuius numeri? Is that singular or plural? And I've trained them to do this. Or cuius temporis? What tense is that? Because there's a mistake in grammar, so I have students now asking one another. But it's even better, and I know that I've worked myself out of a job and can die a happy man, when the student has a little voice inside their own head asking themselves these questions as they work through a text. When they are logically analyzing what they're doing in Latin, there's no need for me anymore. They're a complete student. They have the teacher, as it were, inside of them. So we want them to get that internal dialogue also. So there you go. That's kind of the what, why, and how brief form for what we're going to do with grammar and logic in order to get our students onto rhetoric. If they're going to read Cicero, they must understand the first declension. They must understand the tenses of verbs. And they have to be able to use logic in order to find out what they don't know. Narrow it down a little bit. Okay. So much for the basics. What I really want to do now is I want to make sure that you've got something to write on. You've got your book. There's some space on my outline, but don't be afraid to write on fronts or backs of other pages as much as you need to, because now I'm going to make you work. Because if I lecture, you will remember next to nothing. And this slide here is incomplete, right? Because this isn't a workshop on rhetoric. We're not there yet. And most of us in our schools and our students, we're not ready to talk about composing orations in Latin. We're not ready for that yet. We're still working on the grammar and logic. But I just thought you should see the rest of Bonaventure's definition here. That rhetoric, the aim of rhetoric is to persuade others of the truth. This is lovely. All right. So here's what I'm going to lead you through is a number of exercises. Actually, number 7's already been taken care of if you were in the previous session with Eric Indigard. He gave us a great example of it. It was fantastic. Colloquium, conversation. Very fun, also very difficult for Latin teachers. But I'm going to lead you through a number of different exercises. These names for these exercises are not authoritative. I didn't pull these from some great classical author. Most of them are names that I have come up with from a variety of sources. And I'm only going to be showing you personally how I personally use them in my classes in order to help my students gain mastery of the language. They can be improved upon. And I hope to leave some time for questions at the end. All right, so first we're going to start with recitatio. Recitatio, this is going to help with hearing, memory, and speech. So right here, hearing, memory, and speech. A recitation. So what you want is a passage. You're going to choose a pertinent passage. You want something that's going to fit in with your lesson, either with the grammar that's in your lesson or with the theme of your lesson or the theme of what you're reading. I love to pull in a recitation that's not in the textbook or in the text, but related. And you want to make sure that if it's got unfamiliar vocabulary, you have decided what things your students can handle on their own and what vocabulary you need to gloss for them or any grammar that's difficult. You're going to read the recitation to them. You're going to get them to repeat it to you. And then you're going to complete. Okay, so if you want to add some notes, I would choose a passage that's pertinent to your lesson or relevant. As far as vocabulary and grammar, gloss only those things that are unfamiliar. Only help your students out with what they can't already figure out on their own. As far as reading, make sure that you read distinctly and slowly and do it phrase by phrase. You destroy the meaning of the passage if you read word by word. We don't speak that way. We speak in phrases. And you want the students to think in phrases, even in Latin. And then you're going to call on the students to repeat the phrase, adding on little by little. That's complete it. To complete it, you're going to add on phrase by phrase until the students can repeat it from memory. So I have a short one here that we're going to do. But first I do need to give you a little gloss there. Over on the left are two words that might be unfamiliar to you that you're going to need for this recitation. The first one's a verb, sequor, sequi. Does that look very strange to anybody? Look at its dictionary entry. Does that seem odd? Okay, it should. And then tenebrae, tenebrarum is not hard in its forms, but you'll notice that that word has no singular forms. It's first declension, but it's plural. Okay. Sequor is a kind of verb called a deponent verb. And this is the sort of thing I'd tell my students if they hadn't seen one before. A deponent verb's a verb that has only passive forms, but it retains active meanings. So has anyone in here taught passive forms? Know that there's, oh, good. Oh, thank goodness. I didn't know what level of Latin teachers I was going to have. Okay, so these verbs always look passive, but are active. So there's our active endings, good old OST, mustis unt. And there's our passive endings. And a deponent verb loses all those active endings, or maybe it never had them. Linguists aren't sure. So you conjugate this one, sequor, sequitus, sequitur, sequimur, sequimini, sequuntur. And look at the meanings. They're all active. So sequor means I follow. Non sequitur means it doesn't follow. See? There's your deponent verb. All right. You ready for the dictation? Or I mean the recitation, I'm sorry. All right. Here we go. Ego sum lux mundi. That's our first phrase. Ego sum lux mundi. Can anyone recite it? Very good. Ego sum lux mundi. Omnes repetite. Ego sum lux mundi. Anyone else want to try it? It's easy right now. Bene. Ego sum lux mundi. Now, let's add the next part. Ego sum lux mundi. Qui sequitur me. Qui sequitur me. Ego sum lux mundi. Qui sequitur me. You guys are fast. Is there anyone who will stand on their own feet and recite it for us? Okay. Anyone else? Very good. Ego sum lux mundi qui sequitur me. Okay, all together. Ego sum lux mundi qui sequitur me. It's the next part. Non ambulabit in tenebris. Non ambulabit in tenebris. Okay. Can anyone recite that much? You want to try? You're a diligent student. All right. It's harder than you think. How about I say it and then you repeat it? So, ego dico dende repetite. Ego sum lux mundi. Qui sequitur me. Non ambulabit in tenebris. Bene. Omnes repetite totam. Ego sum lux mundi qui sequitur me non ambulabit in tenebris. Anyone want to try it alone? Sarah. Very good. And this is harder than you think. This is a very simple recitation, but it's hard. Here it is. Here's the whole passage from the Gospel of John. Probably recognized it. And probably you understand most of it. But even if you didn't, now that we've recited it and we've got it in memory, I can put it up on the projector or on the board and I can talk about it with my students and move on to our lesson, and where it's relevant, they'll be able to make those connections. And under the recitation, the last point under recitation, you see it says complete. One of the things that when you're completing a recitation you need to do is find out if the students have got any questions about the passage. So does anyone have a question about this recitation? And then, yes. Well, I teach mostly between 7th and 12th grade. It depends. But this could be done with very young students. I used to teach 3rd grade, and this could be done with 3rd graders. You have to be careful about how you choose it. I'd probably pick students who already know passive endings. Because typically in Latin books, the passive endings are taught before deponent verbs are taught. But I'd like them to have at least one of those two facts. But you can do this just by virtue of repetition and variety to make it fun. Okay, so there's your recitation. Let's talk about dictation. I like dictations much, much better because I can do more with them. And in my classroom, all the students have a whiteboard. They pick it up when they come in. That's their job, to pick up their tabulas and their whiteboard markers. And we do a lot of exercises written as well as recited or spoken. And I've given a space in the notes for a dictation there. Again, for dictation, you want to choose a passage that's relevant. You want to make sure that you gloss any unfamiliar vocabulary before you get started. You're going to read the passage very carefully and distinctly. Hopefully, I'll give you a good example. And I only read the passage 3 times. Only 3 times. I am training their hearing. I am training their memory. And we're going to check their spelling. They must learn to read and write in Latin. Okay? They're going to write it down. And let's see here. There was one other. Yes. They're gonna write it down carefully. They're copying it down. They can make changes as they listen, 1, 2, and 3, and then to the 3 repetitions of it, they can make changes and corrections. And they're gonna write it down carefully because sometimes I take it for a grade, and then we're gonna complete it by showing them the passage corrected, you know, the correct original version. They're gonna correct their mistakes. We're gonna discuss anything that's still unclear. Yes, Neil. For the recitation?
Yes.
There it is. Now we didn't recite that last phrase. No, it's John 8:12, unless I'm mistaken.
I don't know Latin.
Oh. Well, you should know. I bet you can figure it out if I tell you that Lux means light. So I am the light of the world. Qui sequitur me, he who follows me, non ambulabit in tenebris, will not walk in darkness, sed habebit lucem vitae, but have the light of life. It's a beautiful, simple verse that we can use for this, and simple in grammar. All right. Back to the dictation. Okay, get ready to write it down. Here's a couple words that are freebies off to the side. You don't have to jot them down necessarily in order to do a dictation, but you just have them there. Quatenus, mores, imitor, volo, and veraciter. All right. I'm going to show you how I do it. If you'd prefer, I can show you how I do it in Latin. Usually I do this stuff in Latin. Okay, so I'll say, discipuli, nunc habemus dictationem, audite, diligenter, et scribite, diligenter, quod dicam, which is to say, write down carefully, listen carefully, write down carefully what I'm about to say. Here we go. Qui sequitur me non ambulat in tenebris, dicit Dominus. Haec est prima sententia, et nunc repeto. Qui sequitur me, non ambulat in tenebris, dicit Dominus. Nunc tertio. Qui sequitur me, non ambulat in tenebris, dicit Dominus. Haec est prima sententia. That's the first sentence. I repeated it 3 times. You probably have a pretty good grasp on it. Let's go on. Pergamos. Let's go on. Haec sunt verba Christi. Haec sunt verba Christi. Quibus admonemur haec sunt verba Christi, quibus admonemur qua tenus vitam eius et mores imitemur. Nunc repetam. So now I'm going to repeat it. That is the second sentence. Haec sunt verba Christi, quibus admonemur qua tenus vitam eius et mores imitemur. Et nunc iterum repeto. Haec sunt verba Christi, quibus admonemur qua tenus vitam eius et mores imitemur. Et nunc ultima pars. So now the last part. Si volumus veraciter illuminari si volumus veraciter illuminari. Nunc ultimo. Si volumus veraciter illuminari. Now, after I've gotten through the reading, and this one I've really put you through the ringer because I gave you three sentences, I'm going to recite the whole or read the whole passage, and this is your chance to do your final check. Don't worry, I'm not going to take a grade today. Okay. Nunc totam lectionem, vel totam dictationem, legam. Qui sequitur me, non ambulat in tenebris, dicit Dominus. Haec sunt verba Christi, quibus admonemur qua tenus, vitam eius et mores imitemur, si volumus veraciter illuminari. Then I'll show my students the passage. Now, what I want you to do, if you were my students, is that I would want you to go through and keep score. How many words do you have correct? And just tally up your points. But it's not enough to get a grade. You must also correct your errors. So if you see something wrong, you have to fix it. If you see something missing, you have to fill it in. If you see something added, you've got to remove it. A question? I do because I find that it's easier for a student to understand poetry if they're already acquainted with the long and short syllables. If they could always be immersed in Latin 24/7, I wouldn't teach Makrons because they would pronounce it correctly. But it's a good aid for us barbarians. Obviously, there's different philosophies about that, and you just have to adapt this exercise if you want to, either way. So there's the reading, Thomas A. Kempis, Imitation of Christ. It's a fantastic book and a beautiful meditation on the intimate friendship with God of the believer. Okay, so to complete this now, I would probably take a grade because I'm training your hearing. And I'm training your ability to remember, and I'm training you to correctly spell Latin. But are there any questions? It would depend on the age and the level and the relevance to the lesson. I would probably do this with my older 9th or 10th grade students. I'd probably go with something about the length of one verse of Proverbs for any younger grades. You know, two lines, a sentence or two sentences. It doesn't have to be really heavy because what I'm trying to do here is not overwhelm them. I'm trying to train them to hear and remember and spell. Okay, so any questions about the reading here? You already understand half of it because of the recitation we just did, right? He who follows me does not walk in darkness, says the Lord. These are the words of Christ. Haec sunt verba Christi. Quibus admonemur. Ah, it's a deponent verb. It looks passive, but it's not. Or, I'm sorry, this one is passive. Sorry, there's later as a deponent. Quibus admonemur, by which we are warned, quatenus, how far? Vitam eius et mores imitemur. There's our deponent. We must imitate the life and character of him. We have to imitate the life and character of Christ. Si volumus, if we want truly illuminati, to be illuminated. Now, there's a lot of extra grammar in here, and I don't know what's familiar and what's not, but I take a lot of care with my students to make sure that whatever is unfamiliar, I've glossed for them or will explain afterwards. Okay, any questions about this particular kind of exercise? How you might use it? Yes? Well, it took a while. I have to train them. I lose a lot of time if I have them switch it around, and there's a lot of confusion. But I've trained my students to give me their grades, and I can trust in their integrity for the most part, because they're giving me their grades publicly every day. We'll have exercises every day that we do every day, just like an athlete does every day. And nobody needs to be ashamed of making a mistake, because everyone has a bad day. Even the intelligent students mess up. And because the measure of your intelligence and your knowledge of the subject is not always a numerical average. And I have beat this into them to the point that when it's time, I'll say, Discipuli, narrate mihi quat puncta habeatis. Tell me how many points you've got. And I'll call out their names. Gai, and he'll say, decem puncta habeo. Maria, habeo undecem puncta. And we just go around like that, and I've trained them to do that also in Latin. Anything routine I like to do in Latin. I think it's just better. But anyway, yes, they will give me their score. And sometimes we'll repeat an exercise, although rarely a dictation. Yes, ma'am. All of the above. So the things I'm showing you are things that I choose for about the first 5 minutes of class. Somewhere in the greeting and the prayer, I'm going to start with an exercise to get us warmed up, depending on what we need to know. With a dictation, I really enjoy it because it allows me to bring in things that are not part of the ordinary class. And in a short time of 5 to 10 minutes, I have a chance to give them some really valuable truth or some really wonderful beauties taken from classical or Christian authors, and just hold that up there for them. And I always make sure that it connects to the lesson in some way, but it's not something they have in their book. It's extra riches just thrown in. Yes, ma'am. I do that sometimes. It depends on how well they get it. Typically, I find they do pretty well. I think most people would get... Yeah, and it was really rough at first. And I didn't keep the grades at first because they were just not ready to be kept. That's okay. You have the power. You're the teacher. You can decide when your student's ready to be judged. Oh, no. I would probably choose one of these. Okay, so when you come into my classroom, first, I greet you. Second, we pray. Third, I say, get out your whiteboards. And we're going to do an exercise. We might conjugate a verb. We might decline a noun. I might have us do a recitation. I might have us do a dictation. There's not enough time in the class to do all these things. So please don't put that on yourself. These are just tools, by the way, that you may use. Don't feel burdened by doing these things. I found that they work for me. All right, Lectio, we're all doing this. We're all doing this. Even if you have a very basic grammar textbook, you're doing a Lectio. Lectio means reading. This is going to train your students to speak. It's going to train them to hear. It's going to train them to read. This is very simple. I think we all do this intuitively. You want the students to read the whole passage aloud, so read. You got to read the whole passage aloud, and I think there's value in reading the whole paragraph or the whole sentence or whatever it is, the whole 15 lines that you're going to work on aloud. Do it aloud. Language is meant to be heard. Well, Why do you think that you'll be able to process something as complicated as language simply with your eyes and your mind? We didn't learn language by seeing it. We learned it by hearing it and trying to speak it. So encourage your students to do that. Typically, they're chickens, and you just have to tell them it's okay to make mistakes. Okay? We'll work out of them. Then recognize. When you're doing the reading, you want to train your students to recognize what they know and say, ah, I know that word. I've seen est before. It will give them confidence. And it will help them to narrow it down. If you give a child a paragraph, or even if you had a sixth grader, a sentence, sometimes it's overwhelming. They don't know where to start. Start by realizing what you do know. And then note. Take note of anything you don't know. This is important also for the student. It gives them a place to start. And it begins to lead them towards logic. The things that they don't understand, the things they note, should be the things they're going to ask you about. Right? It begins the questioning process. So we'll show you how this works. Here we have a great reading. And this is what I might do. I might say to you, Discipuli videte lectionem. Take a look at the reading. Audite et ego legam. And I'm going to read it, but you're going to look at it. Nam sicut sub uno igne aurum rutilat, pallea fumat, et sub eadem tribula stipulae comminuuntur, frumenta purgantur, ita, una eadem vis in ruens, bonos probat, purificat, eliquat, malos damnat, vastat, exterminat. And you probably don't understand much of it yet. That's great. Okay, now you're going to read it with me. So I'll say, Discipuli legete lectionem. We're going to read it together. You're going to stumble over the words. You're not going to understand 90% of it. Who cares? Let's go. Nam sicut sub uno igne aurum rutilat, pallea fumat, et sub eadem tribula stipulae com minuuntur, frumenta purgantur, ita una eadem vis in ruens bonos probat, purificat, eliquat, malos damnat, vastat, exterminat. All right. Now, at this point, you probably see a lot of things you do recognize. There's a few words. There's some endings. There may be some vocabulary. But I chose this because it's a little bit unfamiliar on purpose. In your book of notes, you'll see that I've actually provided vocabulary for you. Now, with Electio, I don't do that for the student. Typically, Electio, we begin in class, and then I send the students home. And their homework is read the reading aloud 3 times. And then jot down anything unfamiliar that you need to ask about, unfamiliar vocabulary or words, grammar. Then find out everything you can. So part of the student's homework is that they go help themselves using their dictionary and their grammar and all the resources of cleverness that they have. And then they'll come back to me the next day and ask the questions that they couldn't answer. They don't need to come to me and say, quid significat et? What's et? And I have to say, it means and. So then I've just stolen the learning process from them. I'll say to them, ecce dictionarium. Look in the dictionary. Anyway, but I do want them to ask me about the things that are difficult. And so you might be expected to look up the words that I have there in your notes. And once we do that, then we can begin to see what we've got here. This is the Lectio portion of the exercise. And then the Quaestio. I guess I've kind of blended those together. Quaestio is where you note what you find unfamiliar or difficult. And you're going to seek it in the dictionary. Right? You're going to hunt for it in the dictionary, in your grammar, amongst your friends. And then you're going to come and ask me about anything you couldn't resolve. This is the Quaestio. This is a major part of studies, the seeking. And you want to train your students to seek and to find and to know. They have to work based on their grammar, right? Grammar is the building blocks. They know some of it. They have to apply what they know, right, in the Quaestio in order to find out what they don't know. That's an exercise in logic. All right. So there's the words, but you already have those, so I'm going to... let's go. The next logical step is conversio. That's translating. Translating is tough. But not if you've been doing these other things, not if you've trained your students to hear and to remember and to spell and to seek and to ask. If you're training them in all those other actions, then they're going to be better equipped to translate. It won't be a completely insoluble puzzle. But they're going to analyze using logic. They're going to order their thoughts, and they're going to express in English what someone else has expressed in Latin. So there's a lot of ways you can do this, and a lot of different useful tools in this. Defining things, it's what old Latin teachers used to call parsing, is one thing that you can do. You can say, quick, give me the case number and gender of Palea. And they've got to say, feminine, nominative, singular, or whatever. Okay. I don't have the reading in front of me, so I can't tell you. Oh, it is feminine, nominative, singular, good. Okay, so that's one way, sure. But you also have to demonstrate. So one of my favorite new tools is a kind of Latin sign language that I learned from a woman named Anna Andresian. And if you look in the resources at the end of this outline, you'll see a website, magistrula.com. She has a whole system of hand signs that are really useful for teaching Latin grammar and helping a student to do parsing without it being really boring and all about words, which gets exhausting. So the students will read the reading, and they'll give hand signs for the different cases. Nam sicut sub uno igne aurum rutilat palea fumat et sub eadem tribula stipulae cominuntur. And there's these hand signs for active and passive and singular and plural and every case use. It's great for kinesthetic learners, but you've got to check out her website. And you can apply it. It's a useful tool. Other, diagram. I think some of us do this just intuitively. We make the students diagram the sentence, or we draw little arrows and circles and dots and things to help them see how the words fit together. This is all part of the conversio process, which you can do for your students and model for them, but you want them to learn to do for themselves. Dialogue. So if you have a student who's confused about igne and they think igne is the subject of rutilat, and they say that the fire glows red, then you have to ask them, what case is igne? Because it's not nominative. It can't be the subject. The fire is not glowing red here. Aurum is the subject. Yeah, I don't want to tell the student that. I want to ask him questions and make him do it. So he's going to say, aurum's the subject. Aurum rutilat. The gold glows red. And then somebody will probably ask, what's igne? And I'll say, what case is igne? And someone will say, ablative. And I'll say, why ablative? What ablative use is this? And it might take them a while, but they'll get to ablative of, what's up? No? Ablative of means. There you go. Ablative of means. This is our hand sign. Like I talked to you on the telephone in Latin would be teleponio. Te voco teleponio. And so we're going to use an ablative of means. How does the gold glow red? In the fire. All right. Or by means of the fire. Because of the fire. Okay? And then discuss. At some point, you get, thankfully, out of the woods, and you don't have to discuss the nitty-gritty nuts and bolts of grammar. And it's time to actually talk about what the passage means. Now, assuming that you're my students and you've done all the work and we actually mostly understand it, I'm going to just assume, I'm short-circuiting the learning process a little here because I'm just showing you. I'm not making you do everything, but here it is. Can anyone read any parts of this? Has anybody worked out any parts of this? This is a beautiful passage. This is worthy of knowing. It's the city of God. For just as the gold glows red, sub uno igne, under one fire, and the chaff smokes, palea fumat, right? Gold is purified in fire, but chaff burns up. As the gold glows red because it's being purified, and the chaff smokes under one and the same fire. And sub eadem tribula stipulae cominuuntur, frumenta pugantur, just as under one and the same flail. That's what a tribula is. So now you know what tribulation is. Tribulation is threshing or beating the grain, right? Under one and the same flail, stipulae cominuuntur, the stubble is broken. and the grain is cleaned. Frumenta purgantur. That's just an incredible truth if you're a Christian and you're suffering difficulty. To remember that if you're Christ's, you are like the gold. The fire can't hurt you. You're like the wheat. No flail can break you. But you will be purified by it. That's what Augustine's saying here. Under one and the same fire, the gold is purified, but the chaff smokes. Under one and the same flail, the stubble is broken, but the grain is purified. Ita una eadem vis in ruin. So one and the same force rushing upon them. Bonos probat approves the good. Malos, I say, purificat, it approves the good, it purifies them, and eliquat, clarifies them. Malos damnat, it condemns the wicked, it lays them waste, vastat, exterminat, and banishes them. This is fantastic. And what you really want to get your students to is contemplating the ideas that Augustine's got here. That's the discuss point. You're never going to get there if they can't understand the grammar. Okay? You have to put in the time on the grammar and the logic to get them there. And it takes years and it's painful. But you know, it's just like that fire and that flail. It's good. It's good. Good results. There's other things we can do, but we're going to run out of time. These are kind of, if you're more interested, if you teach Latin at an upper level, and this is all kind of basic to you, and you want to see how can you get your students to compose in Latin, I can show you some fun things, because I've been working on that for the past 2 years, about how to get them to do progymnosmeta, how to compose in Latin. But this other stuff is foundational. You need this first. They need to read a lot, hear a lot, recite a lot. Use logic to analyze a lot, build their knowledge of grammar a lot before you're able to go on to this stage, mutatio, the imitating or creating or owning, which is, I hope, well, that's where I want my students to go. But I'd love to show you that, but let's skip these. Well, I can show you one. I'll show you one. This is one of my favorite exercises here. Let's see. Oop, I thought I had synonymies. Oh, this should say synonymies over here on the side, but it says analogue. Okay, so one favorite thing to do is I give the students a dictation, maybe something short like arma virumque cano, I sing arms in the man, and then I'll underline a couple of words. So in this one, I changed all of them, but I might underline just the word cano, and I'll say give me three synonyms, and I'll give them a couple minutes with their dictionary. Hopefully, they don't need a dictionary. But here, look. I sing arms in the man, right? Bellum et hominem canto. Ah, we all know canto. Well, but he's really singing about war. De bello. And Aeneas is a hero, right? Atque heroe. Narro. He's not just singing, he's telling. It's a synonym, kind of. Et martem et militem recito. So there's different, you just vary it with synonyms. Training your students to do that. But maybe just give them one word, right? Just one variable is enough. Change the verb. Give me three synonyms for that. So that's one way that you can take your dictation or your reading to the next level, say, and prepare them for composition and build their vocabulary. But the sidebar that says analogue is wrong. It should say synonymies, synonyms, mea culpa. Analogue is also really fun. So that means a change of grammar in Greek. And you take a sentence and, like this one. This one's from Colossians, I think. Paul says that Luke, that dear doctor, and Demas salute you. Salutat vos, Lucas medicus carissimus et Demas. And now I've underlined the word salutat. I want my student to change that. Change the tense. Someone want to change the tense for me? Go ahead. Salutabat, yes. Or you can say salutabit, whatever. Then you can make them change the number. What if a bunch of people... it is a compound subject. We could say salutant vos. They salute you. Okay? What if we change the voice? This one's trickier. You, right? Vos salutamini. Y'all are saluted or greeted by Luke and Demas. That's a tricky one. That's a tricky one. Only give your students what you're prepared to do on your own, I would say. I'm breaking that rule right now. And then another, you might change a construction. If you're in advanced Latin with subjunctives and stuff, this becomes very fun. because you have about five different ways you could do a command, for instance. Anyway, so these are little exercises and games you can play. They take a short amount of time. They have high value for training your students, but enough. Questions? I feel like I've worn you out. I'm sorry. Well, right, I'm a tyrant, and I'm the head of the Latin department, and so I tell the other Latin teachers you're doing these things.
All right, so you evaluate them.
I do, but obviously I can't do the same for everybody. The third grade teacher does a lot of recitation, not much dictation. Surely she's not going to be doing this. Her students aren't ready. They've only just begun. It's their first year. Not quite ready for that yet. So there's some customizing that goes on. You mean whether their hand signs match? Well, typically what I'll do is that I'll call on one student to sign the sentence and the next student translates it. When we've done the preparation, we've done the reading, we've done the quaestio, we're going to conversio, right? And I'll say, Sarah, stand up and sign the sentence, and she'll say, ego sum lux mundi. But she won't translate it. And I'll say, Eric, you translate it. And he'll give me the translation I can work through. There's a lot of different ways to play with it, but I forgot. So after you sign it and I agree that it's good, if I mark it or diagram it on the board or whatever, I'll make the whole class do it. I'll say, legate et signate. So they'll all say, ego sum lux mundi. And then I'll call on someone to translate it. Any questions? Habetis ne quaestiones. If we need to do more discussion or if someone sees an error. Yeah. And sometimes I won't point out an error. I'll let the kid fail. And then I'll say, any questions? Because I want the student over here to say, I have a question. Isn't that the wrong tense? And I'll say, yes. What tense is it? That's good too. Teach the students to ask questions of one another, not you. If they have to depend on you, they'll never be independent in Latin. Any other questions? I hope I didn't hit you with too much. Just a couple exercises and what they're good for. Hopefully to get us from rote memory to composition and enjoying the beauty, the truth, and the goodness that we can find in Latin. Thank you for putting up with me. If you got any questions or you need any help with materials or handouts or about any of these processes, I can talk with you further. Be glad to. But I think that's time, so thanks for coming.